Welcome to the Power Play Podcast, where international cricketer Kyron Powell and marketing genius Jordan Shannon join forces, bringing you captivating conversations with the biggest players in cricket and business. Join us as we dive into the lives of current stars in the cricketing world, the legends before them, and those extraordinary icons whose performances changed the game in both cricket and business. Exploring journeys both on and off the pitch, the boardroom, and everything in between. Get ready for an exhilarating blend of cricket, life, and business insights with two insatiably passionate, infuriatingly no-holds-barred hosts, who, unfortunately for the rest of us, live and breathe this stuff for a living.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 19 of the Power Play Podcast. I'm Jordan Shannon. I'm joined by my co-host, Kyron Powell. How are you, Kai?
I'm good, Jordan. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. I finally got it out in the end anyway. You have landed in Trinidad. How is it?
Well, Trinidad is Trinidad, but conditions don't seem to be, they're definitely not what they should be from a cricket standpoint. Obviously, turning up to the ground today, expecting to have, I guess, an acclimatization session is what you can probably call these 2 days of practice before you go into these regional matches. But the pitch that we've been told that we've been on, the entire square hasn't been touched for, seems to be some time, you know, it's just completely unprepared, and the practice pitches were actually even worse than that. So it's just sad to see that. I mean, I think there's supposed to be a minimum preparation time. I don't know if it's 7 days or 14 days for a first class match, but
right,
you know, to see things like this happening is crazy to me, because then you're expecting players to go and have averages in the 50s, 40s, whatever the case is the season. You're expecting bowlers to perform on pitches that, you know, test them and test batters. And so you can judge a player's performance properly, as opposed to playing on these types of pitches where it's just skewed in favor of the bowlers, and games will probably last, if a day, no more than two on those types of pitches, just because it's completely underprepared, and it's 2 days out from competition. And this is, you know, the tournament that is supposed to be preparing players for the next level, which is Test cricket. So it's not something that you'd expect or want to see.
But not at all.
It was complete shock and surprise to us today, but here we are.
To everybody listening and watching, just to sort of back, you know, obviously what Kyron's saying there, he sent me some pictures this morning, and you couldn't tell where the wicket would be pitched, basically. And I played league cricket for the past sort of 20 years, and as a player of I wouldn't expect to see that in league cricket. I couldn't believe it. I generally couldn't believe it. And the frustration that it must be for you, and the frustration for all the players, because like you're saying, this is obviously the next step for international cricket. So this is supposed to be, you know, the frustration levels must be ridiculous. And it must also have an impact in a way of like mentality-wise, where you think like, you know, what, you know, if you feel like shrugging your shoulders, like, come on, help us out, you know. We as a great cricketing nation, we want to be competing, and we by competing and getting to that next level, we need your help to be able to, you know, to do the right thing and prepare a wicket to play cricket.
And it's even more than that. It's just basic facilities that we're talking about here now. Look, you know, you'd expect to have come 2 days out from a test match and seeing, like, you know, the outlines of the pitch, you can start visualizing in your mind, okay, this is how I want to play, etc. You don't expect to come to a ground and see absolutely nothing. You know, the grass not cut. I'm not even talking about on the pitch now, just on the field. And, you know, we're competing for I guess, a championship at this point. We're in second position.
Yeah, 100%,
It's important that you have proper facilities, because in order to win a competition, I mean, you need to maximize them, things like batting points, bowling points, first innings points, et cetera, et cetera. You can't accumulate such things on surfaces like this.
Mm.
Whereas other teams are going to go and play their round of matches and play on properly prepared pitches. And so teams will be able to score in excess of 300 and get extra batting points, get more bowling points, because you only get bowling points from fast bowlers getting wickets as opposed to what we are apparently going to be playing on, which is going to be pretty much spin it to win it. It won't even be much spin to win. It's just ball it straight.
Yeah.
Someone's going to get up because the pitchers are going to do something adverse. So it's sad to see that, you know, something like that has even happened, but
no.
Fortunately, that's the situation that we're in.
Why, I don't know, it might be a silly question, this. Why is the game being played in Trinidad? What's the reason for, you obviously know, neither of the sides are based there?
You know, they've got games being played in multiple places. So right now, I think they're going to be two games in Antigua.
Yeah.
One in Jamaica and two in Trinidad, if I'm not mistaken. Or is it? No, I think it's two in Trinidad, one in Antigua and one in Jamaica. So as to why the game is being played in Trinidad, I don't know.
Right.
If that's, I guess, availability of grounds or whatever the case is.
Right.
I'm not sure, however, that this venue is fit for this standard of cricket. I mean, we saw even in the Super 50 that something as simple as drainage, you know, if rain falls, that games, and rain doesn't even have to bother a long time. It could be 10 minutes, 15 minutes, but this particular outfield gets very waterlogged and there's not very good drainage there. I know that the Brian Lara Cricket Stadium is under preparation for the T20 World Cup. And so is another ground that they have here, a very beautiful ground. We absolutely love it. A ground called Diego Martin Sports Complex. Unfortunately, those two are not options. Obviously, Trinidad and Tobago being the home team and playing in Trinidad this week at the Queen's Park Oval. And so we've been left with Diego Martin. I'm not sure if it would be a possibility to move the game, for example, to maybe like something like Guyana, and that has multiple venues, obviously it's a bit short term, or maybe even postponing the game until, you know, maybe at the back of the tournament, because we've got another four games left. So you could put it maybe at the end of what would have been our last game. You could have an additional week or something to that nature. But I guess knowing how they operate, neither of those are sort of going to happen. And it's just going to be deemed as our ground play. And whatever happens, happens. So the guys, I guess, have to put themselves in a mental state to try and make something of the match, and obviously definitely try and win the match. But in terms of, I guess, points and that sort of stuff in the standings, it's definitely a situation where we will be hampered by that.
And have the Cricket West Indies been informed about the wicket?
Oh, that's definitely something I'm sure they were about now, because one of the first things that we did was to report it to our board.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure they've taken it up with Cricket West Indies. But again, as I said, I'm sure pretty much nothing's going to happen apart from them telling us to go and play, and whatever happens in the match happens in the match.
I just hope that, you know, from a perspective of what I've seen, I just hope it's from a safety perspective, everything goes okay, because you look at, you know, you see some games and the way that you get the inconsistent bounce and stuff. And, you know, the last thing you want is someone getting injured off the back of some sort of lack of, you know, for the wicket to get prepared. It's just it's silly. And like you were saying at the start of the conversation, you were talking about obviously you guys going for the title and win the championship, which is, you know, you're in a prime position to go and do that. And it must just be a little bit demoralising to turn up and, you know, you've had a bit of a break and lads have done whatever they've done and you couldn't turn up and you're prepared to go and do your 2 days worth of practice. And then you're like, well, you know, there's a proper kick in the teeth. And I suspect that, I know you mentioned last pod, as well, or the pod before, you were talking about obviously the young lads in the team and stuff and experience. I can't imagine many have been involved in a situation. Well, you've probably never been, you know, involved in many situations like this either. So, you know, I just hope it works out in a positive way where you can, you know, finish the game and crack on to the next game and, you know, close the door on this little issue, really.
I've seen many things. I've gone to a ground and maybe one pitch was underprepared, so they've shifted to another pitch on the square. But that again is where at least other pitches on the square was available, other pitches were prepared, etc. But I've never come to a ground 2 days out from a match and the entire square is unprepared. You know, it's the first time I've ever seen that in my life at any level of cricket. You know, so it's I guess you live and you learn, as the saying goes.
Yeah. Has anything been said from obviously the combined colleges and any of their side? Are they there yet?
They're here. They'd be at practice now.
Right.
So I'm not sure what they have to say about it, but an interesting situation.
Yeah. Oh, it might be like that Test match England played once at Sabina Park.
England once played a Test match in Antigua that got shifted from Sir Richard Stadium back to the ARG because it was underprepared or something.
Just a shame. Like, this is where, like, people probably don't see the knock-on effect it has for, you know, across, you know, the group of players and things, and even like, you know, from a perspective of bringing people through to play while the West Indies at Test cricket level, like it has it's a knock-on effect. You know, it's supposed to be time at the crease, and you know, I don't know. It's just a shame. How is your wrist or your arm?
It is what it is. It has to work. So I've just got to figure out a way now to. Well, I've figured out a way. I went to do some practice at Lord's last Thursday, you know. I've just got to manage it and just, I guess, strap it up and take the necessary painkillers or injections or whatever the case is, and should be okay. Yeah. Soldier through.
Well, yeah. I just couldn't believe it when I'm going to message you. I was like, oh, how is it going? Yeah, I've just come back from Lords. I've hit a few balls and thinking, just had a hit at Lords, like it was just a casual throwaway comment.
That's what I've been practicing for a number of years now. So, I mean, there are a lot worse places in the world to have a hit than Lords, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you're not going to be able to hit a few balls out there, are you, today and tomorrow? So. Oh God! Have you had much chance to watch any cricket recently?
I have been following the Australia New Zealand series. Like, I've watched pretty much every day of that Test match that series. I think, to be fair, that's been a very good series.
Really competitive, hasn't it?
Yeah, the second match in particular, where New Zealand fought themselves back into the match with bat and then with ball, and at 30, I mean, picking up 4 wickets. But I mean, Australia being Australia, just found a way to keep themselves in the fight. I mean, it's just something that as a cricketing country, I think obviously they're the gold standard, I think it's fair to say, of cricketing nations. And they just managed to keep themselves in the fight and came out and found a way to win. And how many times has, for example, someone like Pat Cummins found himself in that situation and just continues to pull it out each and every time Australian need him to go in a tense situation like that and gets a 30 not out. Did it in Edgbaston in the Ashes. He's done it here again. Alex Carey, who's been underperforming for some time, comes out and scores 98 at a very rich rate. Mitch Marsh,
great
again, has been in the runs for probably the past year and a half now, and pull something out again. So it's just the identity of them as a cricketing nation that allows them to stay competitive, and especially in tough moments, you know, World Cup finals, World Test Championships. They just know how to win.
Yeah, they always seem to find a way.
Yeah,
and I think that that's a sign of. I don't want to say great teams. I think they're a very, very, very good side, but I don't want to put them in that bracket of a great side just yet. Because I think that, you know, they're not far off. But I do think though that top sides, it always seems to find a way, and there's always somebody who, you know, gets that vital in it, you know, scores that vital knock or that big partnership. And I think that that's what this Australia side have got at the minute. You know, there was a lot of pressure on. I don't want to say a lot of pressure, because Marnus Labuschagne has been, you know, scored runs for years and years and years, but yeah, I suppose he had been a little bit of, you know, in a bit of a rut scoring runs. And I thought his 90 in the first innings were brilliant. You know, and it took a world class catch to get rid of him from Glenn Phillips. But as a side, they just seem to be able to grind it out. And you know, New Zealand have shown a lot of fight to get back into games and then put pressure on Australia and stuff. And I think this series is showing, you know, what Test cricket is all about. You know, it offers something for everyone, from a batting perspective, from a bowling perspective. It's, you know, it's a really, really competitive series so far.
Yeah, it's been an amazing series. I think the only sad part that we can actually say is that it's just a two-test series.
Yeah, sorry.
Because you always know that the competition between Australia and New Zealand is going to be high, obviously, Big Brother, Little Brother. And I think that it's a series that we need to see more of as well. I mean, I think it's the first time Australia have gone to New Zealand for something like 8 years, which definitely shouldn't be the case for any cricketing country that's 3-4 hours away from me. And I'm pretty sure that they'd love to find a way to play more often. And the cricketing world would love to see them play more often. Yeah, it's been a really exciting series. You look at New Zealand, obviously, Cade Williamson towards the end started coming on strongly as the player that we know him to be. Imagine if there were another test match or two that Kane can sort of get into his groove. You look at a Darryl Mitchell and a Rachin Ravindra, who's going to be an absolute superstar.
Yeah, he is.
The way that they batted in that big partnership, and Tom Latham as well, someone that's done it for New Zealand for a long time. So it's I guess sad that it's only a two-match series, and I think that there should be a minimum of a three-match test series, probably 3 or 5. Mine is how I'd like to see it, but very, very high standard of cricket on display over the course of those two test matches, and even the young fast bowlers that New Zealand had in O'Rourke and Sears over the two test matches bowled beautifully as well. So I mean, lots of high quality talent on display, new guys on the scene for international consumption. But as we said, the Aussies just time and time again just find a way to get it done.
Yeah, and I think that the 170, I think it was, that Cam Green got in the first test match in the first innings was a big thing as well, because he needed that. I know that we spoke before Christmas or just after Christmas about whether he fits in that lineup and his 4-2 high and stuff. So I think that he answered quite a few critics scoring that big score there. And that'll do him a world of good as well from a confidence perspective. And I think that, you know, the way that they're going at the minute, they're the World Test Champions for a reason. And then they're showing that. I actually know this answer before. I don't even know why I'm asking you technically, but do you think they will manoeuvre Steve Smith anywhere else, or do you think they'll just let him ride it out opening the batting?
I think they should manoeuvre him. I'm not a fan of him opening. I think that he moves around probably a bit too much.
Right.
For an opening batter, you see when his end position after he triggers, he's ending up outside off stumps, so he's playing at a lot of balls that he shouldn't technically necessarily be playing at. And obviously, having scored as much runs as he has, he'll find a way if he chooses to stay as an opener.
Yeah.
how successful that will be as opposed to what we know Steve Smith to be.
Yeah.
Is, I guess, sort of the benchmarkings that we have for him. Because obviously he's set quite a high standard. I mean, he's failing at the moment and his average is still 57. It's coming down and his average is still at 57. So, I mean, that in itself tells you all that you need to know about the level or the standard that he set for himself and the heights that he's been able to achieve over a long period of time.
Yeah.
I guess maybe what would be good as well is that I think Australia don't play another test match until next December. In this series. So there's a huge break. So he'll definitely have a lot of time to think and play around with a few things. And the way I look at it as well, I think that he's probably going to keep playing until that home Ashes series. So it's probably another two big home summers for him.
Yeah.
And he'll definitely tinker around with some stuff and get some stuff right. Now, that will be an interesting time for the Australian cricket team because I think Steve Smith and Usman Khawaja will both probably end up after that series. So again, that's two of your most senior batters going out at that time, which is why they wanted to get Cam Green in to go along with Travis Head and Mitch Marsh.
Yeah.
And sort of solidify that middle order, knowing that two of their senior players will be gone in sort of, you can't even look at it as 2 years' time now because there's no cricket for the next year until December. So it's sort of a year and a half's time. In a year's time, from one December to the other, when it comes around to the Ashes. So it'll be interesting. I think he'll convince himself and he'll find a way to, I guess, score runs, especially back in Australian conditions.
Yeah.
And having this amount of time can only do the world of good for him.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. I think that when we first spoke about it, about him going opening, we both said at the time that based on who he is and how he is, he will make it work. And I think that the way that they've now got, with especially with Cam Green scoring that that 170 in the first test, it's sort of like where would he, obviously he would fit in anywhere in that, so it doesn't really matter. But I think with the balance of the side and what they're trying to achieve, they probably do want him to keep opening so they can keep Cam Green at four, Travis Head at five, etc. But I do think the break will, you know, it's probably come at the right time.
And the break will be good for Manus as well at three, because I mean, obviously getting that score and going into a break now, he won't probably feel as if he needs to tinker on as much as he probably would have done. Mind you, if Steve Smith had to move back down into the order, it's not a matter of if someone had to move, it's someone would just have to move.
You just have to,
It's as simple as that. So he has, I guess, the luxury of that much credit in the bank. But I think, as I said, he'll in this time off, which is over a year, he'll figure something out.
Of course he will. I think it worked really well for Marnus in the fact that, like I said, he had that score, so he can now have that break, but not be. I imagine him not knowing him in terms of from an overthinking it perspective, because now he had that look, you know, had that score, he'll probably settle down quite nicely now and have his break and come back, which with that, and obviously ages away, but that'll be a superb series, that Australia and India, Australia versus India, that'll be just because. Leading on to obviously the England, I don't know how to describe it. The England obviously test tour of India. You know, we called it 5-0, but then obviously after a brilliant first test, England just seems to capitulate. And I mentioned to you before the podcast started, I don't want to go on with myself because I feel like a complete broken record going over the same stuff over and over again. But
I'll let you have a run. You I'm the counselor at the moment. You just spill it all out.
I don't want to rant too much because I think, you know, you've made some really good comments about the batting side of things in terms of do they play that way because that's sort of their, you know, the skill. It's what the skills can sort of go down. You know, that's the way they have to play, sort of thing. But I'm just disappointed in the way. Well, one positive, I thought that there was a change of Joe Root after. When he scored his ton, I think since then he's gone back to playing the way that he should play, in my opinion, and the way he does play in that when he's at his best. I think that this, I think Johnny Bairstow getting his 100th test will probably be his last. I think that there's a potential for him, not whether what they decide to go down potentially with him. I just think I thought the way that they batted in the second innings was just a bit of a, I don't know, just felt like they down tools a little bit, to be honest with you. And I understand sometimes going on tour can be hard and it can be tough, but I'm a firm believer in any profession that you should remain professional throughout it all. And I think that it just felt like they down tools a little bit. I've been really, really impressed with Troy Bashir. I think he's a real, real, real talent. And I know we touched on in our last podcast about him going out on loan. I think that that's going to be a really important thing for him to get some overs in and keep this momentum going, because there's no way Somerset are going to play Jack Leach and him. So he's got to go out and get some overs, and hopefully that'll be, we'll start to see something big from him. But another positive was obviously the fact that Ben Stokes bowled a little bit, so that's a nice positive going into the summer. But I just think that there's two things that, in my opinion, that are going to happen this summer. One is the West Indies come over here and think, right, okay, we've got a chance. You know, this side, I won't say fragile, but they're going to give us something. They're going to give us chances with the way that they bat. If we can capitalise, I think there's a good opportunity. Or England do a demolition job at the West Indies, and all of a sudden they'll think that they're the best team in the world again, and they'll come crashing down again. I just want to see some stability and some thought process in terms of going forward. And I think I had seen some changes with the side, especially the way that Joe Root had batted. I thought Zach Crawley was promising, but again, I think the way he's been a little bit criminal, because I don't want to see my opener get to say 17, 18, keep getting out the way he keeps getting out. I want to see him get 150s and 160s. That's what I think will make us into a better side. But you're just smirking now.
Well, I mean, it sounds like baseball wasn't just test cricket; it's been testing its fans' patience. You're all talked out there. but no, I think it'd be interesting to see, because the talk that I've heard from the media is not that somebody like Johnny Bairstow will be dropped per se, but it's moving him back down to seven and giving him the gloves and dropping
folks, yeah,
which seems to, I mean, it doesn't even sound like a debate. It sounds like a surefire thing as to that's what's going to happen. So that's interesting in itself. But I mean, when you look at it in terms of the batting, obviously, I think that they probably realize now that there is some sort of middle ground between the way that they're going now and the way that they can be going, which can obviously be a little bit more reserved than, I guess, get better sustained results. You look at the shift that Root made.
Yeah,
I thought that Bairstow would have made that shift as well, but for whatever reason, he didn't. I think Frawley has to play the way he does, which is fine. It gives the team a different dimension. And you look at the last two series he's had, being the Ashes and this Indian tour, both series getting over 400 runs and being England's best batter in both series. I mean, why would you ask him to change the way he plays? Obviously, I mean, it would be good if he can carry on some of those stats, and I'm sure over time he will do. Just being the nature of the game, and you look at someone as great as Joe Root is, and there's a long period in time when he was guaranteed to get to 50 and also guaranteed to get out right after 50. And then just through time and experience and whatever the case is, he started to convert those scores again into hundreds and went on a spree, and I think got like maybe 10, 12 centuries in maybe a 2-year period, if I'm not mistaken. So I'm pretty sure Crawley will convert those stats. You look at someone like a Ben Duckett, I don't think that he really needs to do too much different. I mean, obviously, I don't think that India was going to be a strong place for him to begin with. So the fact that he got that 150 obviously would have helped his confidence, but he's someone that you look at and averaging 40, whatever he's averaging at the moment, he's pretty good young player, in my opinion, that they should just allow to continue to play out of his time, because, I mean, his numbers are good. He gets centuries, he gets big centuries, and he pretty much contributes more often than not. That opening pair is probably the first opening pair that England can say that gives them this kind of start from St. Strauss and Cook. So, I mean, any opener in Test cricket averaging above 40, especially as England haven't had that for a long time, just let him ride it off. Because you look at his first class stats, and it shows that he's someone that goes on to make big scores and make centuries quite often as well. So I wouldn't tamper with him too much. I think for me, England's, I guess, biggest issues would be sort of an Ollie Pope, has played for quite some time now, and he always looks as though he's about to make that shift into, I guess, sort of an Ian Bell type player, but he never really does. Let's not say he never really does, but he hasn't fully as yet, which is quite an interesting situation from an England standpoint, because batting in that number three position is obviously a crucial person for them. So I think you look at him, Ben Stokes obviously didn't have a great series, and a Johnny Bairstow. Those are the areas that I would say that England would, if anything, look to freshen up or make some changes.
I think the Ollie Pope one for me is interesting, because I think he is somebody who you mentioned before. I think he's caught in between that aggressive slash, you know, I don't say defensive, but in terms of that in-between sort of position, because, you know, I've seen him play some really good innings, and then sometimes I've seen him getting out playing, you know, a bit too loose. And I think he is caught in between that, you know, both the styles of play. And I think that he needs a positive summer this year. He needs a big summer. And I think this little bit of a break before the Test cricket resumes in short June, July over here, he needs to figure that out. And I think that he needs that, you know, to determine what his role is and how to go about his role at number three. You know, Ben Stokes will be Ben Stokes. I think he will, you know, he's a top player. Maybe Bairstow going down to seven, taking the gloves will be the way to go, potentially. But, you know, we'll have to see. But just going, I wanted to touch on the Crawley thing, though, because I appreciate I totally agree with what you're saying in terms of converting them. But how long would you give it, or how frustrated would you be if he was looking outside and he wasn't to convert them, or was to keep getting into 60s and 70s and not convert them?
Sorry, I just lost you for a bit there, John.
No, I was just saying, in terms of the Crawley situation, how would you go about it if he wasn't to convert them? If he was to keep getting to 60s and 70s, would you, obviously that he's scoring runs, so I suppose it's a positive, but would you still see that as an issue if he wasn't converting them into the big hundreds, really, at the top of the order?
Not necessarily. I mean, as I said, through time he will get some centuries and stuff, but he's averaging in the past two series above 40 as well.
Yeah.
Leading runs going those two series as well. So he's confident. He's not short of confidence.
No.
Like, he knows, starting to feel as though he belongs at the international level. He can play at the international level. This is his style of play. And the most important thing is runs. And he's been scoring runs consistently. So through time, he'll get those scores, and he'll understand, okay, this is what it takes for me to play this way and get centuries, and there'll be some element of consistency there as well, because he's getting stats consistently.
Yeah.
And then he'll understand how to convert the scores consistently. And I mean, if Zach Crawley walks away with 12, 15 test centuries, which England fan wouldn't be happy with that?
Yeah.
Really, no. Three or four.
Yeah, true.
So, I mean, he's not far off from the numbers. You're talking about another 8 to 8 to 12 centuries throughout his career.
Yeah.
He's not far away. I mean, that could be literally two or summer.
Yeah. I think the plus thing as well for England is that Harry Brook will come back into the side.
Exactly.
So that'll be a big plus, that. And then, like, that then gives the batting lineup some real strength in depth with Bairstow. Right. Yeah, thinking about what you're saying about him taking the gloves. I was just thinking more when there was, prior to this fifth test, he was saying about him potentially being dropped if it wasn't his 100th test, and obviously from a sentimental perspective. But I suppose, like I said, if he does take the gloves, you know, it makes sense. But, you know, the English summer, which feels a million miles away right now, as you experienced last week.
Never heard of it.
But he'll fly by that, and unfortunately, obviously, you guys might not get the preparation before coming over here because you're batting on
mud.
Yeah, I still can't believe that this morning when you it's mad.
Got draw pitches in Manchester at the moment.
Yeah, true. You want to try batting on the back garden then, the way it is at the minute. Anyway, thank you very much, and all the best for Wednesday. It's out on Wednesday, doesn't it?
Yeah.
All the best for Wednesday. I hope it miraculously changes over the next 48 hours and you batting on some form of highway.
Cheers, Jordan. We'll see what miracles happen in Trinidad.
No problem. Speak to you soon. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Thank you for joining us on the Power Play podcast, hosted by Kyron Powell and Jordan Shannon. We hope you enjoyed this immersive dive into the world of cricket and business, exploring the unique experiences and perspectives of players past and present, alongside those invaluable insights into intriguing business themes that transcend beyond the boundaries of sporting heroics. Be sure to set your reminders on your Alexa or Google Home device. Or we won't tell anyone if you still use those paper calendar things from a bygone era. Join us next time for more inspiring dialogue with scintillating minds on the Power Play podcast.